Greetings, my friends. Welcome to the next episode of the Mint Mob Podcast. Jason here, joined by my buddy Alex across the pond in Germany. We're going to jump into the usual stuff, but before we do, let's check in and see how it's going over in Germany. What's happening, brother?
Hey, man. Everything is great. Looking forward to this little episode today. Always great to be here. And we got a lot of cool stuff to talk about. I'd like to ask you something, because we got the big tariff deal between the United States and Europe today. And let me just quote what the deal actually says. So we have zero tariffs on US goods into EU. We got 15% tariffs on EU goods coming into the US. We got the EU purchasing US military equipment. And we got $750 billion in U.S. energy purchases. Dude, how does it feel being in the winner's team?
I don't know, man. I'd have to go back in time and see just exactly, you know, if that's true or not. As I know that at one point, tariffs were pretty hefty going that direction. So I don't know, man. You tell me, like, what was the situation before, really? Like, I think that would be, you know, kind of what would let us know if it was a good deal, right? I mean, obviously this sounds like a good deal for the US, but, you know, I mean, what were we doing prior to that? Was it like horribly in the favor of the European Union? And so now we're just making up for lost time, or what is it? What's actually happening?
Yeah, that's actually a good question. Let me just check that real quick. I think we had mutual tariffs, but didn't you just mention, like, in the call we had before, that the US has like a similar deal with Japan?
Yeah, I think with Japan we had a very similar deal, it sounds like, based on even those numbers. I think something like 15%, and then I want to say like a $500 billion investment in infrastructure, but I'd have to go back and look to be 100% sure. It's kind of funny because, you know, whether these things are, I think, good or bad, it's been interesting to watch people sort of rip each other apart over, like, the Trump presidency and talk about how he's done nothing and this and that and the other thing. And here we are, what is it, the end of July, right? So not even 7 months in, and, I mean, it looks like he's doing a lot, to be quite honest with you. He's got a lot on the go, and I think because he is doing, I think, so much so quickly, you know, I don't think that people are actually registering, and I know that the mainstream media is not covering him in a positive light, of course, but I mean, I think for, you know, all intents and purposes, the guy is actually moving pretty quickly, and so you have to give him credit for that. And I think he knows that he's, you know, he's only got 3.5 years, and then that's it, it's over for him. So I could see him trying to push as hard, as fast as possible over the near term. But as far as, like, the tariff thing goes, I mean, the U.S. was definitely paying asymmetric tariffs for a long time. I don't have the stats in front of me. I did the research on this a while back when the conversation first started. But, yeah, I mean, to know if this was a good deal, it might just be equalizing what had transpired previously. It could just be balancing the scales. And, you know, who knows? I haven't looked at it to see if there's a time limit on it or some sort of expiration date on it or anything along those lines. But if he is, in fact, getting these deals done, he promised them in the first 90 days, and this is a funny thing, like, the liberals are picking him apart because he's like, in the first 90 days, we're going to have this, this, and this, which was completely unrealistic in, you know, in political terms. Everything happens really slowly. But to have some deals coming through now at the seventh month of the first year of the second term is, I think, pretty, it's pretty cool. Like, it shows that he's moving. So who knows where we go from here. I think the populist, you know, sort of population here in the US, you know, people are at each other's throats, like, they're strongly one side or the other, and they're forgetting, you know, to root for Team America. They're just like, oh, I want to root for my team, or I want to root for, and I want to root against the other team. But, you know, Team America is getting lost in there somewhere. So I'm more concerned at home with, like, what's happening with the division here amongst the populace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I just did a quick research and looked it up. So in the era before Trump, we had low tariffs and some sort of open trade between the United States and the European Union. U.S. average import tariff on EU goods were around 2.3%, and EU average import tariff on U.S. goods were around 3.5%, so slightly higher. But it's like interesting to see that, you know, in the end, it looks like the United States always get what they want. Like, at least looking at the current deals we've seen so far. I think I just read that they paused tariffs on China again for like 90 days. And I think the deal between the United States and China is probably the most significant one, and with the biggest volume, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so many of the goods are made in China and Southeast Asia. I mean, it's not just China, but I mean, actually, it's kind of funny because China, the rise of the middle class in China has kind of pushed some of the manufacturing out to poor Asian countries, you know, so like your Taiwans and your Indonesias, that sort of thing. But yeah, it's interesting, man, to see what's going to happen. You know, everyone was all up in arms with the sort of China, I guess you'd call it almost like a Cold War, really. But then when you looked at the list of items that were excluded from tariffs, it was pretty crazy. So like even the initial sort of warning shot from the Trump administration about the tariffs going out over to China was pretty hollow, because it exempted a lot of things like Apple iPhones, for example. I mean, like, come on, man, like, you know, that's a multi-hundred-billion-dollar business just on iPhones alone. So, I mean, it's not like they were, you know, trying to, you know, like kill the relationship with China. They exempted everything that they thought was really, really important, or at least the top 5 or 10 things that they thought were important. And I remember iPhones are one of them. I think toys was another one, actually, if I remember correctly, being an action figure guy. I think they exempted toys, or there was a like a lobby to exempt toys from the tariffs as well. So, but yeah, I mean, they're going to keep kicking this can down the road until they arrive at something that's mutually beneficial, I'm sure. I don't think anyone's stupid enough to just, you know, arbitrarily burn a bridge with China, because, again, so much of the goods come from there. And basically, the U.S. economy is consumer-driven. So, I mean, that wouldn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, absolutely. But do you think, like you just said, that you rather care about the situation inside the country?
Yes.
Do you think with all the money coming in right now, this is going to get better? Or do you think they will just, you know, use the money paying debts or whatever?
Here's the thing, right? The punchline is sort of in my original statement, right? When Trump said that he was going to have a bunch of deals done, I forget what he, you know, I don't listen to the guy that much. But I remember there were a bunch of headlines about him talking in the first 90 days, he was going to have X number of deals done, right? And I remember thinking to myself, that's pretty ambitious, because, you know, governments move really, really slow. And, you know, the only thing that's really, I think, lit a fire under the Trump administration's ass is the fact that he can't run for office again. So like, this is it for him. This is all he can do, you know, so he's got to go as hard as he possibly can. But when I say the punchline is in the story, when I said earlier, like, people are ripping him apart for not doing anything, and they're using that deadline that he posted as as proof, you know, this leftist moron on X named Destiny, his name's Stephen Bonnell. He likes to talk about, you know, conservatives like they're dogs, like they're animals. And he loves to berate the Trump administration. And it's kind of funny because he'll throw out, you know, this idea, well, he said he was going to get it done in 90 days, and get anything done in 90 days, blah, blah, blah. A typical, like, liberal, you know, I know knowledge, but I know not what the knowledge means kind of a thing. And then, you know, like, forgetting the fact that, okay, some deals have come through in the first 6 to 7 months. And so there's no credit for that, because it was past Trump's stated deadline of 90 days, right? So like, if you're on Team America and the deal gets done in 6 months versus 3 months, wouldn't you celebrate the deal getting done eventually? Like, if you really cared about the success of the administration and then the people who live under that administration and within those borders, rather than just saying, well, nothing got done, he didn't do anything, you know, he said 90 days, nothing got done in 90 days, you know, it's like time stopped at 90 days. But, you know, meanwhile, forgetting the fact that previous administrations really don't do anything in their first 2 years, right? So this guy's getting some stuff done in the first months. And I'm not, you know, I'm not here stumping for Trump. Like, Trump's not my favorite person. But when it comes to getting shit done, it's fun to see a politician move in any direction, you know, because the truth is they move so incredibly slowly. So when I think about, you know, this attitude of watching your P's and Q's and looking at the details more than the sort of outcomes that are being generated, whether they're on your particular time scale or not, that tells me that we've got a massive population who aren't really concerned with the overall well-being of the nation, but concerned with whether or not their side wins. And when you're in that spot, man, you're in a really dangerous place, especially when you have the middle class being taxed to death and a shrinking middle class and more people struggling to get by. This creates more and more populism, which creates more and more my team versus your team. And that's really the danger right now, is this whole us versus them narrative that both parties have been pushing for a long time. And that's more concerning than anything. So for those of you guys who are listening to this and kind of follow this stuff closely, you know, if you look at Ray Dalio's work on how empires rise and fall, you know, this guy is a multi-billionaire, you know, ran a multi-billion dollar, one of the most successful, if not the most successful hedge funds in the world for many, many years. You know, he's basically identified certain cycles that cause this sort of behavior to happen and how empires and populations within those empires sort of rise and fall and go to war with one another and all the rest of it. And, you know, there's a sneaking suspicion among people who follow that work that the U.S. is on track to go to war with itself, which would be obviously an incredibly terrible outcome. So, you know, that's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing more and more vitriol from the team picking and not enough unification around this is who we are and this is what we want to create. So that's definitely problematic.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think the problem you're describing is, you know, not just related to the United States. I think we have that in almost every Western country. But like you're right. You cannot deny that, you know, Trump gets shit done. And I mean, just, you know, look at his first week, you know, all the executive orders he signed. But like J.D. Vance would be eligible to run for president, right?
Yes, of course he'd be eligible. Trump would be gone though, so I think.
Yeah. Do you think that's a possibility that he runs for president after Trump?
I think he probably does, but the question you have to ask yourself is, you know, if the Trump administration is able to do enough positive things for enough people, so that they would vote for a J.D. Vance, for example, right? And so when you look at where we're at. And the mainstream media still to this day will not acknowledge any positive outcomes from the Trump administration. Again, they're cheerleading for their side. You're going to see more and more people who are uninformed or who don't work or who haven't been exposed to the tax system, people who lead with their heart rather than their head. They're going to move away from the party that's being demonized. And right now, again, that's always the Republican Party. So, and then, of course, you've got Elon Musk wanting to start the America Party, I think he's calling it. And anytime you have a third party, it throws a monkey wrench into the numbers because now you can win the election without a majority, right? So if Trump stole voters, Trump would steal voters probably more from the Republicans than from the Democrats, which would lessen the total number of votes for Republicans and increase the total number of voters for Democrats. And probably not be effective in terms of getting anyone from the America Party elected, but just serve as spoiler to one of the other two parties. You know, we've seen this before in the 90s with Ross Perot and that sort of thing. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, but I think the Trump administration is going to have to really deliver some positive goods. And that's hard to do without government handouts, which is why, you know, most politicians just promise more and more government handouts.
Yeah, man, absolutely. I mean, one thing is for sure, U.S. politics never get boring. And looking forward to see to see what happens in the future. One thing I wanted to touch on that I just read is I saw that PayPal allows merchants to accept crypto payments. Mm-hmm. Not here in Germany, obviously. Do you see something like that? Like when you open PayPal, are you able to pay with crypto?
Yeah, when I open my PayPal account, I actually have some Bitcoin in my PayPal account and just a tiny little amount. But yeah, it's right there. You have crypto wallets for, I think it's Bitcoin, ETH. I forget the others, but Bitcoin, ETH, maybe Solana's in there. Maybe USDC, the majors. I think most of the majors are in there. It's not a robust wallet, but there's a few.
I think they have their own token, right? PYUSD?
Yeah, they do. That's obviously in there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But I think it's like it opens the gates for like how many million people, like 600 million or something, using crypto. And I think that's a great thing. And I love that, PayPal in general is very crypto friendly and has always been.
I think PayPal has done a lot for like monetary exchange just in general. I mean, obviously they started back in the day as one of the very first companies that actually addressed the problem of transacting online person to person, right? So they've been in the game mm-hmm. since the beginning. And yeah, I mean, it only makes sense that they would incorporate crypto for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. What else did I read? Venmo and PayPal users can now send money to the US government to help pay down $36 trillion national debt. How much did you send already?
Absolutely zero. Yeah. They get that one way or another, right? Via taxation. It's funny, right? Like this year has been one of the worst years of my life from a sheer monetary standpoint, from being robbed of a massive portion of my wealth in January to just little things happening like transmissions going out on cars or like this past week I had a water heater here at the house break, right? And so I'm like, do I really want to replace this water heater with like a standard water heater, or do I want to use like the tankless kind of water heater, the small square one, And I was like, let's be like the cool kids and let's do the tankless one, right? And so I'm shopping around and I find one at Home Depot for like $1,200, right? So it's like twice the money of a tanked water heater, of a regular water heater already. But then you go to check out, right? And so the money that I'm spending, I already earned from someone who paid taxes on that money, okay? I have to pay taxes on that income as well. Now I'm going into the store and I'm going to buy a $1,200 water heater with cash that's already been taxed at least twice that I know of. And now I have to pay like 9.3% sales tax on top of that. So it's another $110 or whatever it is on top of the, the $1,200. So now I'm at $1,300, right? And so the government has taken tax money on that money that I'm spending multiple times. And so people look at tax rates and they're like, oh, well, the U.S. has like a lower corporate tax rate, or the U.S. has like a lower individual income tax rate. And while that's true in a lot of cases, you still have to factor in all the taxes that you pay to consume goods, and people forget that, right? So right now, the middle class in the U.S. is paying more than half of its income out to taxes. So basically, they're working, they're slaves for 6 months out of the year to the state, local, and federal governments. And this is ridiculous and unsustainable. The same thing's happening in Europe. This is why you're seeing so many people fighting in the streets over, economic policy and handouts and this sort of thing, right? So, like when it comes right down to it, I think that the monetary problems can only be solved by young people embracing crypto, right? So like the PayPals and the Venmos and now banks who can now custody stable tokens. Like all of these different avenues for younger people to get involved in an asset that won't be devalued, or that can at least be somehow protected privately from double and triple and quadruple taxation. Like this is one of the ways that you can protect yourself from all of that. And so there's no better option. There's no better market. There's no better time for anyone who's curious to be involved in the crypto markets and start learning about them. So all of the things that you mentioned previously and the like the PayPals and the Venmos, for example, they are just perpetuating the story that, hey, you should take a look at this. And as that continues to grow, again, adoption continues and people who were here earlier will reap the most benefits. So yeah, I'm 100% behind that.
So from what you said, I guess you haven't donated anything. But yeah, I get that. I mean, you kind of pay for...
Yeah, I'm forcibly yeah. donating multiple times from the same dollar. That was kind of the point of my long story there, right? Like we all do that.
That's what I wanted to add.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. I always wonder how, you know, countries or cities like Dubai manage to have zero income tax. I have no idea. Is it because of the resources, all the gas and oil they have, or what is it?
Well, people forget here in the U.S., like the income tax wasn't a thing until the central banks were created, right? And Social Security and all the rest of it. So, like at the inception of a economic system, governments tax transactions, and that's perfectly fine because on some level you could argue, all right, well, you're doing business inside my jurisdiction, and the people within this jurisdiction are being protected and provided for in some semblance. By the government that resides over that jurisdiction. So you could say, okay, there's a privilege that I pay for to do business in this jurisdiction, right? And that's one argument for taxation. So if I'm a business and you're a business and we trade, let's say, you know, like you deal with cars in the real world and I need a car, right? So I come to you and I buy a car and that transaction bears a taxation. Okay, fair enough. But after that tax is paid and you pay yourself whatever profits out of that particular transaction, there shouldn't be more tax owed on that particular money because it's already been taxed. Does that make sense? So like, let's say you sell me a car for $10,000.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
Right? And of that $10,000, let's say $2,000 of it's profit. And let's say, you know, I'm just using round numbers. Let's say Germany takes 10% on that transaction. Okay, so now you owe the German government.
It's 20.
Okay, so now you own the government $400 out of that transaction, okay? So you pay them the $400 and you pocket the $1,600. All right, well, the $1,600 you pocket has already been taxed, but because you're going to get a record of that transaction showing that you had received a payment of $1,600, now you're going to have to pay tax on that income, and that should not happen because that money was already taxed. But in the U.S., And other Western developed nations, we continue to tax the same money over and over and over and over again. That's the problem.
Yeah. I mean, I totally get that from the example that you just made. Obviously, like from the 1600 and all the other profits I have, I would have to pay around 40% as an income tax, you know, after the whole year. And then obviously once all that money is taxed and I have it in my bank account, I have to pay taxes when I consume goods, as you just described. Mm-hmm. And that obviously sucks. So then you have to pay tax for properties you have, and you know, it's all the time paying taxes. And you know, still like the biggest fines you can get is, you know, when people try to avoid paying taxes. Obviously people have to like go to prison for pretty low tax avoidances, whatever, while, you know, people doing much worse things don't have to fear any jail or whatever. Like, this is one thing that has always been a problem with Western countries, in my opinion. I'm not sure if, you know, like, I don't know, African or Asian countries are comparable, you know, when it comes to taxation. But it's definitely a major problem. And obviously the money we pay in taxes is like not even spent the way we would want it. So that's why we have, that's why it, you know, it doesn't make sense for many people. Like, yeah. The whole system doesn't make sense.
Yeah, of course. And the thing, the biggest problem with the whole system from an economic standpoint is that once it starts to unravel, you can't stop it, right? So we're at a place in time right now where people are consuming tons and tons and tons of social media. And I mean, like just this past week alone, like I saw I don't know, at least three posts where people took screenshots. Now, I don't know if these are true or not, but they took screenshots of their total portfolio value in crypto. And they're like, one guy's like, I hit my $1 million mark. I'm selling everything. I'm done. Right. And another guy was at like 900 and he's like, I've hit my mark. I'm, you know, I'm done, blah, blah, blah. And like, when you look at that as someone who doesn't have that type of wealth or that type of money, there's an envy that's created. And so social media has sort of manifested like more and more and more envy. Like, you see this person and that person making these crazy deals and this and that. And it's such a small percentage of the population that live that way, but it looks like it's everybody and you're not participating. So then there's this envy created, right? And then when governments try to solve problems, really their first and only line of defense against financial problems is to print money. And when they do that, they rob from the poorest people. And then wealth inequality expands because wealthy people own assets, and assets go up in value when inflation is in the system. So every time they print money to help quote-unquote poor people, they make rich people richer and poor people poorer. And so the craziest thing about like the modern left is that they think that more government handouts and spending is going to somehow solve this problem. And it doesn't. It makes it worse every single time. And like right now you're seeing, I saw an article, was it this morning or yesterday, where Britain or England is expected to lose roughly 16,500 millionaires over the next 5 to 10 years because of their wealth tax policy. So now they're starting to create this situation where they've repealed a law that says if you live within their jurisdiction, you don't have to pay tax on money that you earned from other countries, right? So now if you're, let's say you're an American citizen or, you know, you're a citizen of another country and you earn your money in another country, well, you're now going to have to pay tax on that if you live within the borders of Britain. And so people don't understand this, but like, you know, when you get to the point where you start doing things like that, both quality people and quality money goes to where it's treated best. So all of those people are projected to leave. They've already begun. There's a mass exodus of millionaires from the UK right now. Right, and one of the places that they're headed is the U.S., but the U.S. is talking about instituting similar wealth-type tax policies. And people don't understand the difference between wealth and money, right? Like, people look at Elon Musk, and they're like, oh, the guy's worth $300 billion. He's got $300 billion. Well, no, he doesn't. Like, the total value of his assets might be $300 billion. But for all you know, he's got $100 in his checking account. Right? Because the wealth is not the same as the cash. Now, sure, he can cash in his stocks, and I'm sure he's sitting on a ton of cash, but at the end of the day, it's not equivalent to his holdings. But those holdings are going to continue to go up in value so long as the U.S. government continues to print money. And that's going to make the wealth gap bigger, and it's going to make poor people poorer. And this is the thing that is so devastating and so hard, because like when you watch political elections, and you see like the left voting for these policies that you already know are going to make the problem worse, it's just like, it's so frustrating to watch, man. I mean, I can't even put into words how frustrating it is. It's like, I always envision, you know, like Christ on the cross going, you know, like, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. You know, that's like what I'm thinking when I see that sort of stuff happening. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, in the end, the solution to all this is Bitcoin, actually, because you do not have to own expensive properties or whatever. You can just buy Bitcoin, even if you're not like one of the rich guys, and you will take part in, you know, in all that as well, in that creation of wealth. And yeah, that's one good thing about crypto. And I feel like more and more people start to understand this. I think I read it today again. I read again that, you know, all cryptocurrencies besides Bitcoin are going to zero. And I know there are many, you know, many fans of other altcoins out there, but, you know, in 50 years from now, I'm not sure, like, if we need all these tokens. And I know that you keep saying that you think Ethereum, Solana, all these tokens are going to survive, but will they survive in the same way, or will, you know, the whole frame change? You know, like, will we have like some sort of Solana stocks? Will we have these tokens still? You know, I'm curious to see if all that changes, because in my opinion, Bitcoin is always going to be the only store of value, while the others may have utilities. But do we need tokens or not? Or do we treat them as stocks? Or this is one thing I'm curious to see in the future.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, the way things exist today will not be the way things exist in the future. But that's also true of Bitcoin, right? Like, if you look at Bitcoin when it was originally incepted, it was a peer-to-peer, you know, cash system. Like, that's literally on the title of the white paper, like peer-to-peer cash, right?
Yeah.
And so it was designed as such. And then, you know, as the system grew, you know, they added different things. Like, they added different types of wallets, right? So right now within Bitcoin, there's at least three different types of wallets. And then on top of that, you had the Rod Armor code that allowed for ordinals and now runes, right? And so you're going to continue to see more and more development on the platform. So it's not going to exist as what it was incepted to be solely. There'll be other purposes and reasons for its existence. But is it going to be the best medium to transact in, say, art? You know, probably not. Is it going to be the best medium to transact in business? Well, maybe for large singular transactions, but not for small recurring transactions, at least not as it exists today, which is why you have like the Lightning Network and you have, you know, Stacks and all these other sorts of tools that ride on top of Bitcoin, right? Whereas something like an ETH or a Solana is purpose built for speedy, small, inexpensive transactions. And that's what business wants, right? So when I say Solana has a lot of business use cases, they prove that time and time again by getting faster and faster and faster. Like just this past week, they released an announcement where block sizes were increased, and which of course allowed for faster transaction speeds, because now you can stuff more transactions in the same block, right? So like they keep doing things to innovate speed and keep doing things to lessen costs. That's what business wants. But now if I'm a, you know, like if I'm an investor and I'm talking to a financial services company on the other side of the world, and we're doing some massive one-off business deal, that's probably going to happen in Bitcoin because Bitcoin is the most stable, right? So if I send it today, it's probably going to be worth roughly the same by the time you get it 15 minutes later. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Not true of ETH and Solana. I mean, those things might drop 20% in the next hour. You never know.
Absolutely. And that's what I meant. Like when we see PayPal, for example, accepting crypto, I don't see a future where you can, you know, basically choose between 30 cryptocurrencies and, you know, pay with Solana, Ripple, Ethereum, Polkadot, whatever. I think what might be possible is that we see, you know, all this happening with USDC, USDT, whatever, and on Solana network or maybe ETH or like whatever network. But yeah, like I said, I don't think that these assets are, you know, that they, you know, suit to be used as for payments, because as you said, you know, way too volatile and all that stuff. Yeah, that's my two cents. I think we should take some time and speak a little bit about NFTs as well, as we have a big thing coming up in the Goodfellas project. We got the sirens who will be duplicated and come to Solana, our home chain. I think you did all that last week, right? The Solana, the sirens are already born on Solana. They're just waiting to be distributed, right?
That's correct. Yeah, that was finished, I think, Friday night after our spaces. So yeah, I had already started Thursday and gotten, you know, most of the way through it. Had some issues with the data and the numbering, of course, which I mentioned on spaces. But when we got off the call, I was able to get all that sorted and get it out with updated metadata and expanded metadata. We talked a little bit about that on the spaces as well. So those are ready to go out. And the numbers on Solana will match the same numbers as you had on Stargaze. So all you really need to do is submit the numbers and proof that you hold those numbers in the tickets, like Alex was talking about inside Discord. And then when we do the distro, it's really easy for us to just pull up those numbers in Magic Eden and transfer them over. So pretty simple, pretty straightforward.
Absolutely. So the distribution will take place this week, should be done by Sunday, at least for the the wallet submitted by now. And after that, we will have an additional batch of 90 pieces drawn by the wonderful Daria. She gave us some more sneak peeks, and like I gotta say, it keeps getting better, man. I love the outfits, love the hat traits, and looking forward to sneak peek it to the community. What do you think?
Oh, they're absolutely gorgeous. And she's taken a lot of time, obviously, in these sneak peeks to make sure that she put, you know, traits together that really work. So colors and shading, like she's taken the time to personally edit the pieces, which we've talked about a lot, you know, like not just throwing together a computer generated set of NFTs, which have complex imagery because it doesn't work, but actually throwing a little bit of an editorial eye into the batches so that we kick out or modify all the pieces that don't really make sense. So she sent some pieces that she personally put together. And of course, they look amazing because being an artist, she took the time to actually match proper traits with proper colorations, and everything looks absolutely beautiful. They do look more modern, more streamlined, but they still hold that, you know, that original vibe. So yeah, it's going to be pretty slick to see how they're well received that they are compared to the original art. I think people are really going to love them.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I think we can say that she's currently working on the hand traits. So we have not seen many hand traits yet. I'm really looking forward to those ones, because obviously the hand traits are very special always. I think she create a hand trait already? I think she did on the very first piece she sent us, which was, no spoilers, right? let's drop a little alpha for all the podcast listeners, which was like a stack of cash. You remember that piece?
Yes, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, and that that looked so awesome. So I'm like, she's very, very, very creative, and yeah, like we said, I love everything she created so far. And yeah, man, it's like it's hard sitting on these pieces not being able to show them, right?
Yeah, for sure. But that, you know, the thing is, we want to get this distro done so that everybody's got their pieces. I know, you know, like STC, one of our collectors specifically, you know, mentioned that she wanted to make sure she had both. She had the OG piece on Stargaze, and then she had its sister, its matching companion on Solana as well. So we'll get all that handled first, and then we'll open up the mint for the 90 pieces to move the collection from 210 to 300 so that we're at an even 300. And then we'll go from there. Everything should work really, really well.
Absolutely. And on top of that, we, of course, have some artist incubator artists lined up as well. We got Anna up next. Anna is the one who served as a translator for Liam on Spaces. She's absolutely looking forward to speak on Spaces again. Beautiful piece she created. And then we have another girl from Iran. Jason, you can pronounce her name, right?
Yeah, Katare, I believe is how she says her name.
Yeah, something like that. Very, very beautiful piece, very talented artist as well. And she will be next after Anna. So we got plenty of pieces left, plenty of art left, plenty of things we want to share with you guys. And I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, think we got it all done, right?
Yeah, man, we got her all in. Those are the high points anyway. And we'll obviously be back for Friday's Spaces and have more information for you guys. But for now, yeah, keep an eye peeled. Make sure that you've got your tickets submitted for your Stargaze pieces to get the mirrored version on Solana. And then also, if you have any outstanding AI or 21s pieces, make sure that you reach out and get those requested as soon as humanly possible. We're going to put those in Treasury for anyone who hasn't claimed their pieces yet. I know there's a couple people in my circle that still need to claim theirs, but go ahead and claim those as soon as humanly possible, and anything outstanding will go into Treasury.
Yep, absolutely. So I wish you guys a great week. Looking forward to see you on Spaces on Friday. And yeah, have a good one. Bye-bye.
Yeah, take care, guys.